And Shkoyach, I, in many ways, I feel very at home here. I've had so many people come over that know they lived there, they lived here. I've met them so many places. I feel very much that the part and parcel of the Olam. I guess two special memories I want to touch on is the first group of boys that founded the Yeshiva Gdola in Greater Washington were a group of Philadelphia boys. Adam the Feldmans, Peter and Nick, Garfield, and some others were the first class at Yeshiva that we very fondly remember. We've had many of our boys who found a home here, either for a temporary tkufa or for to settle, and Baruch Hashem seemed to be extremely, extremely happy with the community and everything it has to offer. I especially want to mention that we were fortunate to have a woman from Philadelphia who's become assistant principal by us and has done tremendous invigoration in the school, and it's we owe HaKar Satov for having the privilege of having her there. So it's a wonderful kesher, ruchnistike kesher, a human kesher, and Bez Hashem, we should always be a kesher for very good things in Bez Hashem. I'd like to speak about a halacha in Rambam. It's a halacha that is strange because you don't find halachas that seem to be based on feelings. The Rambam says, this is almost the last halacha in Ner Chanukah. Yud Beis, mitzvahs Ner Chanukah, mitzvah chaviva hi ad ma'od. Ner Chanukah is an extremely, the word chaviv is beloved mitzvah, and a person needs to be very careful with it. Vafilu elo mayochal, elo min atztaka, even if the person is supported by charity. Shoyel oymoichek susoy, he has to either borrow or sell personal items like clothing, v'lokeach shemen v'neirs umadik, and to buy shemen. This halacha of the Rambam is unique, and let me explain to you why. In Dalet Koises, in Arba Koises, many shittas, and that's the halacha of Shulchan Aruch, it also says that the reason that you need, even if you're a poor person can't afford it, you must go out, sell your personal items, or go from door to door to get money together for Dalet Koises. The Rambam does not pass like that. The Rambam says that tzedakah is obligated to give him Dalet Koises. Does not mention an obligation to go out and to beg or to sell personal things in order to get Dalet Koises. So in our understanding, the Shulchan Aruch, and the way we paskin, is that any form of Pursumei Nisa, favorite or not so favorite, obligates you to do that. And the two examples are Dalet Koises and Chanukah. The Rambam does not say that. And the Rambam, it's implied from the Rambam's omission that you're not obligated. So Pursumei Nisa does not obligate a person to sell his belongings. It obligates him to make a tremendous effort, but not to beg and not to sell your clothing. So the reason for Chanukah is because it's a very beloved mitzvah. We're not aware of a halachic category of that nature, of beloved. Pursumei Nisa is a halachic category and it has many, many details that follow because of it. We don't have anything like that about a mitzvah chaviva. Okay. I stand corrected. I like to be a little more user-friendly and translate. He's told me that English is chaviv, and people like English, so we will try to... And I guess for Pursumei Nisa, you also, to spread the words about the miracle, you also need to say it in a language that people understand. So the Rambam gives us the reason why a person must make that extraordinary effort is because it's beloved. Because it's beloved, why does it obligate a person to do something like that? If you feel like it, and you're telling me that people love it so much that they do it, okay, that's a nice thing to say. But obligation because it's so beloved, That's something that's very strange. We also would like to find out, what is it about Hanukkah that's so beloved? I mean, it's wonderful, but all Yom Tov are wonderful, and Pesach is wonderful, and Sukkot is wonderful. We don't have to choose favorite holidays. That's not it. And he makes the point that it's favorite. What makes it favorite? It's not a question of liking it, obviously. I mean, you know, everyone can choose the Yom Tov that he likes most. What is it? There's something, a quality about the Yom Tov that makes it the most beloved. And that is the point that we're going to try to explain and understand in the Rambam. First, it's very hard to find a source in the Talmud, in the Mishnah, the Midrash, this concept that it's a beloved mitzvah. And the Rambam almost always bases his rulings on a source. It's not, very rarely does he give his personal opinion. And if he does, he makes note of it. He's basically a compilation of information that's there. Where is it? So there is some mention of it in a bit of a different context, but I think seeing it inside is going to help us get possibly a sense of where the Rambam is coming from. I'm not going to read it inside totally, but I'll just say it over. It's a Medrash Tanchuma. And it says, Reb Meir says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, the candles that Aaron lit, the Kohen Gadol, lit in the Beis HaMikdash, are more valuable to me, or more chaviv to me. The same word. They are more dear to me, more beloved to me, than the sun and the moon. In other words, both are luminaries, both of them illuminate. The sun and the moon, in terms of absolute scope, it dwarfs anything we could light here, and it's God's handiwork. But the candles that Aaron lit in the Beis HaMikdash are more chaviv to me, more dear to me than anything else. Why? So it says, because. How did we get to those? It says, when Aaron HaKohen saw every single head of each tribe bring a sacrifice when they dedicated the Beis HaMikdash. And though that's actually what we read in the Sefer, we will be reading it the next week, each head of each tribe brought a sacrifice to dedicate the Beis HaMikdash, he felt very left out. And the language that he uses is, Hoya nafsha shel Aaron aguma. Aaron felt very down. Everyone, every head of every tribe is offering a sacrifice to dedicate the Beis HaMikdash, to consecrate it, and I am on the side. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, well, I'm going to make a special dedication for you, you'll have the candles and so on. That's the gist of the Medrash. So it's a very nice point, but it still doesn't, we're missing something here. It says they're more dear to me than the sun and the moon. He's explaining why he gave Aaron HaKohen the job of lighting the candles. But there's nothing, doesn't seem to be anything over here about why we would call it more dear. It's the other way around. He was trying to be nice to Aaron HaKohen, and he said, okay, I have a job for you. But what in this interaction would lead us to believe that it's more dear than anything and so on and so forth? That's the point that I would like to try to address in this Medrash. This Medrash does seem to be the only place, the only source in Talmudic literature that mentions the concept of the candles being beloved, same word, chavivin, and it still leaves us mystified. It doesn't seem to tell us what made it so chavivin and so on. So I'm going to try to explain the concept of the word chaviv in Hebrew. It's not really a Hebrew word. It's only one place really mentioned in the Chumash. It's actually more, it seems to be more of an Aramaic word, borrowed in Hebrew. But I'd like to try to understand the specific meaning of chaviv, which is translated as dear, versus ava, which is love. Ava would be the generic term that includes any type of love and attachment and liking of something. And chaviv seems to be a very special term. This description, this definition, is from a sefer called Keheles Yaakov. It's not such a known sefer today. It was written by an incredible Talmud Chacham. His name is Yulis, and he lived at the turn of the 19th century. In other words, from 1780 to 18 something. That was his time period. He wrote. He seemed to have been a massive knowledge. He wrote compendiums on halachis and compendiums in Kabbalah, and it's not the works are known. They're not so well known today, but here's something on a Kabbalah style, where he takes all terminology in Chumash and many terminology in Gemara and gives it some sort of Kabbalistic meaning, sometimes quite obscure, sometimes something that's approachable that we can get something from. He defines the difference between Ahava and Chiba, between love in its big sense and Chiba in its special sense. And he says a remarkable definition. I'm going to sort of try to demystify the mystic part of it, and he himself explains it in ways that make it quite understandable. I'll say first the terminology he uses. He says Ahava is totally with Midas HaChesed. It's all good. When you bestow something with Ahava, there's no ifs, ands, and buts. It's a giving with no issues. Chiba is something that has an element of midas hadin in it, meaning some struggle, some issue, some problem, not simple. And he gives us an example. He uses the Mishnah that says that chiba yesera, an extra measure of chiba, of endearment, is given to Klal Yisrael because kli chemda, and a very desirable object, entity, was given to them, which is the Torah. So he explains, the Torah didn't come easy because the angels really were upset, and they fought, so to speak, Moshe Rabbeinu over it, and there was a struggle, and they said, I mean, you can't take human beings who are really not terribly holy people and give them a Torah. And Moshe Rabbeinu had to debate them and struggle. So that's why it's called Chiba Yisera. And then he explains. It's counterintuitive, but when you think about it, it really hits home. If somebody gives something to somebody, it's nice, it's fine, it's good, but there's no real attachment to it. We don't tend to feel extremely attached to things that are for free and without much issue or struggle or whatever. You know, it's nice, it's fine, it's good, came, went, and that's it. When something comes with a struggle, when something is difficult, and you have to push and pull and so on, you become very attached to it. And it becomes something that you really feel is part of yourself. So chiba is the attachment. It's nice. Imagine, and let's take an example. I mean, we have men and women sitting here, and I, Baruch Hashem, a father, a grandfather. We all know the difference when a baby is born between the mother's feelings and the father's. We won't elaborate on it because the fathers will be a bit embarrassed, all of us, but it takes a long time of staying up at night and diapering and feeding to start feeling attached. Because it's nice, a wonderful gift. Here's a baby and it's yours, but it didn't take effort. It didn't take any real hard work, labor. There was nothing, no input. Those type of things have a very, very shallow attachment. Something you struggled with and for, that becomes very attached. And he says further, it's not only the struggle of Moshe Rabbeinu and the angels, but Moshe Rabbeinu's his victorious statement was, you angels don't have any Yetzer Hara. You don't have any evil inclination. So Torah for you is not going to become ever attached. It's like telling somebody to do something he does anyway. Okay, it doesn't mean anything to me. But for us, we're keeping the Torah is a struggle. When we do it, it becomes part of us. Torah can't be with the angels because at best it'll be like a superficial layer on top, so to speak. With us, we may or may not keep it sometimes. But when we keep it, it becomes integrated in us because it comes with a struggle. So we have chiba as a special form of love. The love that comes when there's a struggle, effort, a possibility I wouldn't get it, and I got it. That creates a special bond. And let's find it in one or two other places. It says that when Avram Avinu sent Eliezer, his servant, to go look for a shidduch for his son, he wanted to make sure that he would keep faithfully to the instructions. And he made him take an oath. And the halacha is that when you take an oath and you hold a sacred object, it makes it a much more powerful oath. And that's why in a very strong oath, a Sefer Torah would be held. We don't do that today, but that's the way it was done. So it says, Rashi says, and the Pasuk, that he had him grasp his bris milah. And it says it was the first mitzvah he ever had, and it was a mitzvah that was extremely painful. It came with a lot of pain. And that's why Rashi says it was so chaviv. It's words he uses. It was chaviv to him because it came with pain. For an older person to undergo bris milah, it's very painful, very traumatic, and that's why it was so dear to him. So dearness is something that is a product. Dear in the sense, again, I don't know if the English translation does it justice. Chavivus, we'll use the word chavivus because now we have some definition for it. Chavivus is an attachment that is there because of the suffering and the struggle that you went through. It has two elements to it, and let's understand the elements that go into it. One is we feel very attached to it. It's especially meaningful and it's especially dear to us. And it lasts. It doesn't dissipate. And the reason is because something that I didn't give up anything for is not me. It's an exterior, it's laying here. Somebody put this down, somebody took this and put this down. It's not me. It doesn't become me. But if I give up something of me, time, effort, emotional drain, worry, all of these things, then whatever happens is sort of an exchange for it. This didn't come easy. This took years of my life. This took a tremendous amount of emotional energy. So it becomes part of me. That's the dearness is because I don't feel it as a possession, but I feel it as self. And two, when I have something that's part of me, I don't give it up. I have plenty of tchotchkes laying around the house, so tchotchkes come and tchotchkes go. But this is this. If it, the deeper the struggle and the harder, the more I gave up for it, the more it's me. It's years of my life, it's worries, it's tears, it's sweat, and I don't give that up. I don't amputate that and let it go. The Gemara says, it's a medrash, it says, Amr Abchanina Ba Papa, Torah Shalamarati Be'af, Torah that a person learned when through struggle, Niskaimali, that Torah remained with me forever. In other words, Torah that came to me easy is not a Torah that lasts. Easy come, easy go. And, you know, some people hold on to it more, some people less, but it doesn't have that. The Torah that came through difficulty with me, that stays with me forever. There's a very, very interesting. The child that is Yaakov Avinu's favorite child is, on the one hand, Yosef. Yosef is called Ben Skunim. He is a child of his older age. It's the child that he shared the most with and was able to communicate everything that he had, and therefore he is, in a sense, Yosef was a favorite. And that's why the brothers were so jealous. But there's something about another child that's not said about Yosef. He says about Binyamin, Nafshi kshura benafsho, my soul is bound with his soul. And it's something that if he would, something would happen to him, I would not survive. Yosef made him depressed when Yosef left, and his life became a half life, but he survived, despite the fact that Yosef is nominally his favorite child. That's the way it says it in the pasuk says Ben Skunim. It means everything he had, he saw in Yosef. That's the child that he saw, his legacy. And yet, Nafshi Kshur Benafsho doesn't say it about him. It says about Binyamin. What is it about Binyamin? We don't even see that much in the Torah. The answer is, Binyamin is Ben Oni. When he was born, his mother passed away, and she named him the child of my grief. When a child is the child of your grief, that's Torah Shemat Be'af. That's the type of nafsha aguma love. That's the type of relationship that is you. So long as the relationship is, I love your company, you're so smart, and I can give you over so much, and we have so much in common, it's a bond, it's a very strong bond. But when something is cut out from you, when something is that type of being Torah Shalmarati Be'af, it's something that came to me with tremendous difficulty, with the ultimate sacrifice, then it's you. It's not one step removed. It's you and yourself, and you without him surviving is an impossibility. So we have here a concept called chavivus. And chavivus means things that are attached to you, not because they're so attractive to you, they started out as being possibly attractive, but because you sacrifice for it. So it's a special subcategory of love and attachment that's the result not of something that you like, but it's something that you gave yourself into it and you see it as being yourself. Of all the miracles HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestowed on the Jewish people, they were wonderful gifts. We were in Mitzrayim, we are suffering terribly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself, took us out. Tremendous ahava. We HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu kept us in the Midbar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us from Haman. Those are all wonderful moments of ahava and closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why Yontif is a time when we express that ahava. But we never gave of ourselves. Chanukah was a very different type of Yontif. Chanukah, we stood up and said, we will die rather than become a Misyavnim, rather than become assimilated into the Greek world, culture, religion, etc. When you give of yourself, it becomes something that is chaviv. And that's why this mitzvah is a mitzvah that's especially chaviv, because we sacrifice for it. The only yontif that we sacrifice. And it reflects itself in the halacha. Because the Torah wants us to give for mitzvahs. How much? Well, for a mitzvah's essay, a positive mitzvah, it's up to 20% of your income. Or your assets, as I heard. For not being over negative mitzvah, it's all your assets. But we're never, ever, ever expected to take our shirt off our back and sell it for a mitzvah. We're never expected to borrow for a mitzvah, to beg for a mitzvah. The Torah demands what we have, not what we are. But there's one mitzvah that's chaviv. And that chavivus means it was a mitzvah that we gave of ourselves, and therefore we will give of ourselves. It's appropriate in the spirit of what the of what was unique about Hanukkah, that we are expected to do something that's unique. I want to go back to that medrash about Aaron and get a sense of what the medrash means. We said there's something missing in the medrash. He doesn't explain why the neros, why the candles in the Beis HaMikdash were more precious to him, more chaviv, than the sun and the moon. Well, let's look back again. Let's take a second look, and we'll realize that the sentence we thought was just introductory is really the core sentence. It says, because Aaron HaKohen nafshei was aguma alav. He was tremendously distressed and upset that he didn't have a share in it. That's the reason why they became so precious. If it's something that Aaron is grieves over, in a sense, it upsets him that he can't do it, then it becomes very precious. The heads of the tribes who brought the sacrifices, they brought beautiful sacrifices, spent a lot of money, was very lavish, was very nice, was fine. But nothing, it didn't come with any angst, it didn't come with any stress, it didn't come with any hurt or pain. Aaron HaKohen stood there and he was hurt. So the neros to him are not just a nice gesture. There's something that comes with agmas nefesh, and something that comes with agmas nefesh is precious more than anything else. The sun and moon might be very bright, but they're a gift. They're grati. HaKadosh Baruch Hu dumped it on the world. We have it, and it's wonderful. These neros were something that somebody shed tears over, and that's why they are so precious. So let's sum up, and I would like to read something fascinating. So we explained, based on the Keheles Yaakov, that there in the world of Ahava, which is really the bond between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the people and Klal Yisrael, there is Ahava in a big sense, which means things that Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu like about each other, that Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from each other. These are things that are that form the basis for our Kesher with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's certainly wonderful. Avos Hashem is the basis of Avos Hashem, and it should be that way, and that's the way it is. But there's a subset of a unique type of Ahava, and that's called Chavivus. Chavivus means things that are, in English, the word dear is a shadow of what the word should be. It's something that is not something that I love, but something that's part and parcel of myself. And the items that fit that description are those items that I cut out for myself, that I had to cut flesh for myself to bring them into being. The more something was difficult, hurt, the more I sacrificed, the more I gave up for something, that becomes an element of chiva. We saw it in a few places. We saw it by Aaron HaKohen with the menorah. When Aaron HaKohen stood as everybody else brought their offering, and he felt left out, and he felt the tremendous pain of not being able to contribute to it, and that pain became Neros. And that's why it's very interesting. We think of those Neros and the Neros Hanukkah as being two separate elements. The Medrash says the temple will become destroyed and sacrifice will be gone, but Neros will stay forever, because the candles that we have today are a manifestation of any time somebody sacrifices. They're rooted in Aaron HaKohen's Agmas Nefesh, and they replay themselves in Baruch Hashem Noyim, when we were willing to kill ourselves and let ourselves be killed to stick with it. It's true in a grand picture. It's also extremely true on a personal level, in terms of a person's what a person gets out of the world of mitzvahs. I want to read a fascinating letter. It's not a real letter, but Rav Volba was a big Baal Musa in Eretz Yisrael. He had a yeshiva for many years. He passed away about 10 years ago approximately. And he wrote a sefer, which is sort of a guide for a yeshiva boy growing up in yeshiva, facing the challenges and difficulties of a yeshiva. And he has a letter addressed to a boy who's suffering from jealousy. It's something in a yeshiva where the atmosphere is intense and everybody's trying to succeed and do extremely well. So everybody succeeds somewhat, but everyone is somewhat jealous of people who are better in this area, this area, this area, this area. It's a strong environment, a tough environment, demanding environment. So as part of his guide to yeshiva, Bach, he has a letter addressing his things and so on. I want to pick out a sentence that he's trying to explain to him. You need to come to grips with the different levels and abilities of everyone. Has different abilities in different areas, and he wants to show him that what seems to be a shortcoming in an area, in a deeper sense, becomes a real advantage. And he says, "Ato you, kichshechazar talin echad kama vekama pamim." You, who has to review something time and again, a lot of times, until it becomes clear to you, or else you just forget it. But when you've done that, when you've really worked hard, you feel that it became part of you. The thing that you sweated over so many times, you feel it became absorbed to you, in you. And you have tremendous satisfaction, and there's a happiness in knowing what you've accomplished. That guy with the photographic memory over there, that, you know, once and remembers it, and that's it, doesn't feel it became part of him. And it never penetrates to the core of his neshama, and it doesn't fill his heart with that joy and that satisfaction that your heart gets filled with. So what he's saying is, yes, on the surface, since everything is measured with a test, this guy who in one, you know, remembers everything, doesn't forget anything, he seems to be succeeding a lot more. Okay? That's if success is measured by getting all the answers right. But there's a much deeper measure of success. How much is the information you know you? So when we're talking about telephone numbers, it's inconsequential, and the less it's you, the better it is. But when you're talking about Torah, that the person feel he has it, I want to tell you a story in yeshiva. This is going back probably 18 years ago. A boy came to yeshiva, and he was the first boy that Rav Einam Zecharno Vracha he was the Rosh Hashiva. He was extremely bright and very demanding, and most people did not do well on the entrance exams. Usually the end of the entrance exam was a mutual frown on both sides. That was the usual. One boy comes in, and he knew his things, he knew his material backwards and forwards. And Rav Einema was really overwhelmed. He said, "You're the first one that I've seen knows it so well. Like, tell me about yourself, what is it?" Now, this boy learned in yeshiva afterwards. He had natural below average abilities, really below average abilities. And he worked very, very hard. And he was a very open person, very straightforward, very open, a very rare combination of personality. And he told Rav Einema, "You know, it's very hard for me to get material down. It's really hard. And I break my head on it, and I'm scared of forgetting it because I have to go through the process again. So I really sweat and really go over the things again and again till I have it cold." And then he says, "I'm so happy with it. I'm just so happy with it, it stays with me." And that is what he means. It's when we approach the world of mitzvahs, and each, so it's a very, very broad audience, from people sitting and learning kol to people who are coming in and so on. And everyone has their own world of mitzvahs. Everyone has the mitzvahs in the Torah that comes easy, and everyone has those that come difficult. Understanding what's so uniquely precious about those things that come with difficulty, it doesn't make it less difficult, but it doesn't remain a difficulty. It remains an attainment and an achievement that I couldn't have gotten without it. The tzar gil bonim of the mitzvahs that come hard to us, make them part of us. That's the chavivus that we have for the world of mitzvahs and Torahs, because there was Agnes Nefesh, because there was Torah that I learned ba'af, because it was something that needed a sacrifice for it. It was betzar. All of these different categories make it an indelible part of us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be mezakas. On this Yontif of Chanukah, which is a Yontif that came through Mesiras Nefesh and Klal Yisrael, and gave us an attachment to it that never becomes separated. That all the things HaKadosh Baruch Hu help us that we should do the mitzvahs well and successfully, and we don't ask for difficulties, but that the things that come with difficulty to us, we should be zocho to tackle it appropriately, and to have that chavivas fit, that special bond. And that special happiness of understanding that the things that came with difficulty became part and parcel of us. And as HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself said, those candles, those lights, they may be small lights, but if they came out of a person's ogmas nefesh, out of a person's pain, that he wanted to achieve something, he wanted to attain something, and that's where it came from, those are more precious than the bright luminaries, because it's him. And those are the type of things that become part of you, and they never leave us. We should be zeichet to those matanas tovus in this Chanukah Mitzvah.